Jeff, not only is it the Boise State week, finally, but this is also the first episode that we have ever recorded in the same time zone.
Oh, wow.
Well, look at that. I mean, we were both in the same time zone, but, you know, not Arizona, not practicing daylight savings time, et cetera, et cetera. Our clocks are aligned now.
I was on a call today with somebody from California, and he was on a trip to Mexico sometime last month. And I did not know this, but apparently Mexico does their daylight savings time in mid-October. And so they switch time zones a couple, 2-3 weeks before we do. And so this guy was there during the time switch. And he's like, yeah, like I had to do fall back twice. And my phone was so confused where we were when they were in Mexico. So kind of weird. Time zones are weird, man. It makes no sense. I don't know why. Like, why don't we just get rid of the Pacific time zone, get rid of the Eastern time zone? You split it in two. You've got East and West. And it's the Mountain time and Central time. You have two time zones and they're an hour apart. I think that in the year of our Lord 2020, we have the sophistication to figure out if I need to adjust my work schedule so that I can have daylight.
Oh,
then we just adjust the work schedule.
No, see, I have been a big proponent of this for a long time, of just get rid of time zones altogether and just go with a 24-hour clock. Single the whole world, which I don't know how much you have to work with people in. Like, if you guys have any offshore employees or deal with people in other offices, but like, it is so confusing, especially like, okay, well, let me think about this. Okay, well, what about your time? Okay, well, you know, you got to pick someone's time zone when you say that. You say, like, hey, can you meet at 6 p.m.? Nope, I'm sleeping at 6 p.m. I work from 2 a.m. And it's like the arbitrary hours of what is daylight. Like, that's arbitrary. You'll get over it. Trust me, I promise. Like, you know, it'll be different. It'll confuse some people, but you'll be fine. I promise. Just everyone go pick a single time zone for the whole world, especially the people in Australia and India that are on a half hour time zone difference. Like, those,
that's so dumb. Gotta
cut that first.
Yeah, that has to be done. I don't mind a single time zone. I mean, like, you could figure it out. What's the adjustment? Instead of being awake from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m., you're awake from noon to 2 a.m.
I was talking about this once, or like tweeted something about it, and someone was like, so you want me to work at night? Like, I'm only working graveyards if I'm, and it was like, no, the 9 to 5 doesn't matter. That's, you're too tied to 9 to 5. Those are arbitrary numbers. It could be 8 to 6. Everyone, we could get up early like old people and work 7 to 4. I don't care. It doesn't matter, right? Like, it's, that is an arbitrary time window to work. Just
the sun, the sun is still going to come up at the same time every day. Whether you want to call that time 6:30 in the morning or 11 o'clock, it's the same.
Right.
It's exactly the same. Yeah, no, I agree. I don't, though. I mean, I like the idea of, let's start with America where we can control, and let's get to two. Let's just get to two. It would make sports so much better. It would make life so much better. It would make flights more realistic. You know what is the worst? It's the worst when you're flying from the West to the East and you forget that you're going to lose a couple of hours. And so you look at your flight and you're like, oh, like, okay, I only have to fly for, you know, 4 hours, but then in reality, or whatever it is, I don't know how it all works out, but you end up being on that plane for way longer than it feels like you should be.
Yeah.
But then you fly with the time zone on the way back and it just doesn't make sense. I hate it. I really hate it so much. I remember flying on my mission, and dude, we had the longest flights. I started in Salt Lake, and then I flew, what is it, like an hour and a half to Los Angeles-ish. Right. And then I flew from LA to London, which is a long flight. That's like 13, 14 hours.
Maybe not quite, but it's long. It's probably like
long.
9 or 10.
No, it's longer than that, isn't
it? No, because, so get this. If you go from
confusing myself with,
well, because you go again? Over the top. So, like, if you go from LA to New York, it's 5 hours, but New York to Moscow is a 10-hour flight, or 9.5, 10 hours, but LA to Moscow is only 12, because you can't just add them together because you, like, go over the North Pole.
Okay. So 10 hours and 15 minutes, according to the Google.
Okay.
All right. So then, so you fly the hour and a half or whatever from Salt Lake to LA. 10 hours and 15 minutes from London to LA. That wasn't even the longest flight, if I remember right. Then we flew from London to Johannesburg, which I'm going to look up right now.
That one's going to be long because that's like you're just going down forever.
It sucked, man. That flight is 11 solid hours. And then from Johannesburg to Madagascar, I think was like another 3 or 4, maybe. Like it was not close. Dude, so that was the worst. But I remember that flight. And maybe that's where it's the stupid time zone. So it's confusing me. But I remember that flight from London or from Los Angeles to London. And it just, I felt like we were on the plane for like 15 hours. Also, speaking of this,
I'm looking up the world's longest flight now, and there's actually, you can go direct from Atlanta to Johannesburg.
To Joburg, yeah, it's a new flight. I was just going to talk about
hours, but then the longest one, it's apparently from Newark to Singapore, is 17 hour, or where is it? Nope, that was LA to Singapore, is 18 hours and 30 minutes is the longest flight.
I couldn't do it, man. By the time I got done, and I guess I remember London, we only had like an hour long layover. Like it wasn't very long to get from our flight from LA to the flight going to Joburg. And so we were really, I remember being on a plane for, according to this, 21 hours out of like 23.
It's a no for me, dog.
It sucked. I mean, and then I had to come home and do the same thing all over again.
Did you ever have to go anywhere to get a new visa?
Like on my way, you mean, or while I was there?
Either way, so it's like I had a year long visa, so I went to Bulgaria for a week in the middle.
Oh no, but I did when I got to Johannesburg. This freaked me out because like Johannesburg, I mean, in a lot of foreign countries are like, you know, different, obviously, but like Joburg scared me because South Africa, you hear all the horror stories of it,
right?
And they made us enter the country. You know, like we landed in London, you just stay at the airport. Like it's right. Like yeah, go connect your flight. No, like I had to go into Johannesburg. And like they took my passport, I had to be stamped in, get a temporary visa, and enter Johannesburg in order to get from like terminal to terminal. And the bus, I remember freaked out, and I was 19 years old and a freaked out missionary anyways. But I remember the freak out that I had getting on this bus and driving across the terminal, whatever, the airport in South Africa, and looking, and there were just huge walls that didn't have, well, they had some barbed wire, but it was mostly just like broken glass bottles that they had like glued the broken glass to the top of the walls. And then guards with just like heavy, heavy machine guns, huge guns. And they were just like sitting there and it's like, this is the airport. And they just made me come into this country against my will. I don't know what's happening. And we as the missionaries were, I think, the only ones on the bus. I don't think there was anybody else going from whatever terminal we landed in to wherever we were going. And I remember thinking to myself, these guys are just driving us out to the middle of nowhere to kill us. Because like there was no buildings. You just happened to show up and it was like, oh, terminal. I guess I'm here now. And so it felt like we were just on this bus being driven to where they were going to slaughter the missionaries. It freaked me out.
I had a similar experience. So I did an internship and I was working in Moscow for a summer, and it was the year that Russia invaded the Crimean Peninsula, which is like I served there for 6 months. And so a girl that I taught and had gotten baptized, like she was having her mission farewell, and I wanted to go visit there because I knew there's a very good chance I may never get a chance to do that again because getting a Russian visa is very difficult. And since it was under Russian control, I already had a visa, and so I could get in there. Yada yada. And so I went down, I just like booked some plane tickets, and we weren't supposed to, like, part of our program with the internship, we weren't supposed to travel anywhere. And I texted my best friend, I was like, hey, I'm going here. I will let you know when I get there. If you don't hear from me in like 2 days, call my parents and tell them to like call the State Department. And so I go to the airport and I'm checking in for the flight, and the person at the ticket counter is like, are you sure you want to be going there? And I was like, yeah, it's fine. And then I get off the airport, the other thing, and I have to go through security. And a similar thing is, but when we landed, they had like armed guards lining the runway, and you know, it's a smaller airport. So I had to like park, and you just like walk down the plane and walk across the tarmac. And it was a similar thing. And then they were like, are you sure you want to be here? And I was like, yes. And then, so then I go walk to the bus station to buy a bus ticket to get to the town that I need to go to. And the person with the bus ticket like looks at me and he was like, dude, what are you doing here? I was like, I'm going to see my friends. It's fine.
My word.
But so that was a fun time, and I mean, nothing happened, and it was totally fine.
I feel like these stories, like, we're not going to talk about the election because we're not going to talk about the election.
No, it's stupid. We're only talking about topics of importance.
Yeah, well, we haven't formally discussed that we're not going to talk about the election, but I feel like I could speak for you in knowing that we're not going to talk about the election. But it does feel like an appropriate time to talk about these experiences at airports in foreign country, in different foreign countries, and say, hey, you know, it's going to be okay, folks. What, no matter what side of this you're on, it's going to be okay. I don't think we're there yet. Johannesburg was a little different, and Moscow is horrifying, but we're not there yet, folks. Everything's going to be okay.
Yep. It'll be, everything will work out. Things won't get too off the rails.
Do you know what is off the rails? Zach Wilson and his potential draft status, he could go.
I know the PFF, the Pro Football Focus love affair, runs deep, but it runs real deep because,
whoa,
this mock draft, which, I mean, he's been in a bunch of mock drafts, but there is one mock draft that goes 1, Jets, Trevor Lawrence, 2, Giants, Justin Fields, 3, Jaguars, 1, Zach Wilson. And they say, he is the highest graded passer in college football. He can win from the pocket as well as on the move. He's got a quick release and can sling it from any platform. He doesn't miss. Get used to it. He is an elite quarterback prospect.
Yeah, that's insane. Michael Renner. So somebody on our board over at Cougar Sports Insider, they keep track of these mock drafts, and they gauge the accuracy of the outlet and of the author of the mock drafts. And Michael Renner is the one who does the PFF. He's like their main expert on all things NFL. He was the 6th most accurate mock draft last year, which is pretty darn accurate considering the number of mock drafts that get put out, especially as you get closer to the draft. To be 6th out of however many hundred there are, that's a ton. And if he is saying that Zach Wilson is going to be considered as a potential top three pick, then Zach Wilson is going to be considered a potential top three pick. We still don't know a draft order. So this isn't to say it's, you know, set in stone, go to the casinos and lay down your money. Zach Wilson, top three. Don't do that. We don't know who's even drafting in the top three yet. But the fact that he's there at that particular outlet has him there tells me that Zach Wilson has a very, very, very good chance to be taken in the top 5. Yeah. And as we've talked, you know, we've talked over the last several weeks about what it would take. If you're Zach Wilson, what's it going to take for you to declare for the NFL draft? That decision's been made. That decision's been made. So we said it for a couple of weeks, but enjoy the next three games that are scheduled, potentially a 4th game that gets added, and, you know, hopefully a 5th game in a bowl. Enjoy the next 5 games that you've got with Zach Wilson wearing BYU blue, because once those games are over, it's done, folks. He's gone.
Yeah. If he's going, I mean, we talked about before, it's like, oh, you know, get, like, he needs to be in the first round, or maybe needs to be, because if you're projected in the tail end of the first round, you could fall into the second or possibly even to the third, whatever. If you're being talked about as top 5 and you're one of the top 3 quarterbacks, you got to go. Like, sorry, you can't. Like, you know, it's at the point where you realize that that is the same thing as when people last year were saying, like, oh, maybe like Justin Fields and Trevor Lawrence shouldn't even play this year. They should just sit out and get ready for the draft because they already know they're going there. They could only get hurt. Like, that is the realm at which people are talking about Zach Wilson falling into for the draft. So
here's
go get that paper, man.
My only problem, and this should in no way influence Zach on his decision, like, he should go. But let me just read to you some. I'm not even going to tell you what I'm going to read, but I'm going to read it. I'm going to get 3 words into it, and you're going to know why, what I'm going to say. Jets, Giants, Jaguars. Okay, he's not going to go to the Dolphins. They've got Tua. Cowboys, Falcons, Washington Football Team, can't go to the Chargers. They've got Herbert. The top 8, like the worst 8 records in the NFL right now, those are all garbage organizations.
I mean, even though even between the what they're saying, like the Jets and the Giants, which it's funny that both of those teams just drafted quarterbacks 2 years ago and Sam Darnold and Daniel Jones. But the like of those three, I would almost like I'd rather go to Jacksonville. Like Jacksonville, there is, I think there's more talent. There'd be more talent around him. It's just like it's a poorly run organization, but there is more talent around him in Jacksonville. And being in like a smaller market, I feel like you can just kind of like lay low. Like there was like a half a decade when Jacksonville went to the playoffs a couple of times with friggin' David Gerrard as their quarterback.
It's true. Right?
Like you can go to Jacksonville and like expectations are low. There's not a ton of pressure on you. Like it is a, I feel like that's a spot where if you're a quarterback, I mean, they gave Blake Bortles like 10 years, right? Like
they really did. Like you could go, you could develop. They've got some talent now. They've got really good receivers. I get it. I can't wrap my head around Jacksonville. I have committed personally that I really don't have an NFL team. We were 49ers fans when I was a kid, and that was mostly because of Steve Young. And I don't think I realized it as a kid that the reason we were 49ers fans is because of Steve Young. But it is. And I committed vocally on Twitter, you know, hashtag no interviews, hashtag blessed, hashtag all glory to God, that I am committed to whatever team takes Zach. That will be my new NFL team. And I will indoctrinate my children the same way my father indoctrinated me, to the point that they think they are a fan of whomever drafts Wilson, not knowing that that's why they're a fan of that NFL team. So I have a recommendation, and I get it. It's going to potentially cost him millions of dollars, but I feel like it needs to be done. Not this week against Boise, but if Zach can maybe throw a couple of interceptions against North Alabama and maybe slip out of this top 10 discussion and get to like the Panthers, the 49ers, the Bears, the Raiders, I think that there's a much higher likelihood of success in those organizations. So if Zach wants to make a calculated decision and maybe throw some games or throw some picks, not throw some games, please don't do that, but throw some picks so that his draft status slips a little bit, I think that's what he needs to do. I had a junior Jazz draft. Look, I'm going to talk about my buddy Steve Bartle over at Ute Zone, and I know BYU fans are not fond of Steve Bartle, but he and I go way back, childhood friends, deal with it. Steve, when he moved into our neighborhood, I happened to know that he was a really, really good basketball player. Like, really good. He's left-handed. He was a big guy. Like, he had some touch. He was really good at basketball. So we had a junior Jazz. We used to do a draft in Syracuse City. And everybody who would go, you know, would just go and work out basically like a combine, and the coaches or the dads would then have a draft and pick like their fantasy draft, right? And my dad was the coach with one of my really good friends he and I played on the school team together. And so we knew that we were already going to have kind of this stacked team, but we just thought, man, if we could have a big three, how good would we be? Well, we didn't get the number one pick that year. So we had to go to Steve Bartle and say, Steve, nobody knows who you are, but we need you to throw the draft. And so Steve went out and he looked awful, like absolutely awful. He was throwing layups hard off the glass. He was pulling up for free throws and like airballing them. Like he just looked awful. And then he made a big scene. I think we were in seventh grade, eighth grade. He made this huge scene. And so he looked like this attitude, poor sport. And then my dad drafted him with the number two pick. And everyone looked around like, did you not see this kid? He was terrible. Well, we knew, obviously, that Steve was great. And Steve, we came out for the first game. And I remember we won our first game 56-5.
That's mean.
It is. And it wasn't fair. But we ran the table and that's what happened. And it all came because Steve was willing, for the betterment of his future and our junior Jazz future, he was willing to throw the draft. And I think that Zach, for the betterment of his future and in an effort to get out of Jacksonville, get out of, you know, New York Giants territory, get out of potentially the Washington football team that sucks so bad they don't even have a name, to get out of that area, he's going to have to throw. He's just going to have to look bad. Going to have to look bad against North Alabama, a game that it doesn't matter. Maybe he could look so bad, Kalani could get in on it, and they could pull him from the game, and then Baylor could come and like lead BYU back for a win. And then Mel Kiper will talk about that. Oh, Zach Wilson, he really struggled against North Alabama. Maybe that's what needs to happen.
Mel Kiper accent.
You know who has a really good Mel Kiper? Is Mitch Harper.
Okay. We're going to have to get Mitch on, him about that on Cougar Sports Saturday or something. Get him to start talking about Mel Kiper.
He can do it. And he also has a really good Robert and I, but that's beside the point. I think that Zach needs to do it. I mean, I know I'm rambling at this point, but damn it if I don't mean it. I really want Zach to succeed in the NFL.
It's great for the program. Like when people would be upset, or whatever. It's like, well, one, Conover is doing incredible things in practice, and he will most likely. I'm confident that he will beat out Baylor Romney to be QB1 next year.
And
Jaron Hall. I mean,
I have been told, I want to quote exactly what I was told. I'm not going to say who told me, but somebody who's very, very wise said, quote, he's running the offense as well as Zach.
So let's start that hype train. I mean,
I'm ready.
We started hype trains for Isaac Rex. We started hype trains for Dax Milne. We started hype trains for Tyler Batty and Saleti Faveliaki. And we said all season long that Zach Wilson was going to be a damn good quarterback. So if you are blessed with the give 'em hell hype train, the give 'em hype train, we'll call it the give 'em hype train.
Ooh, I like
then it. Then you're going to have a good season. So players, if you want us to start sending some extra love your way, because the capacity is limited, we can't, you know, cheapen it and inflate it, right? With all of, by adding the whole roster to it. But yeah, I'm all aboard the Conover train, and people forget that he got an offer from Bama. That doesn't just happen.
I'm looking at Kyle Griffiths. I don't know why. I don't know Kyle personally. I don't know if you know Kyle personally, but it feels like he is in a position that he could maybe get in on this hype train. So Kyle, hey man, we're ready. We are ready to bless you with the give 'em hype train, but you got to reach out, you know, like we're not giving this stuff away for free. And that's really what it is for me, man. Zach Wilson, getting a lot of NFL love. Look, it isn't just
if there is background noise. I do have a 2-year-old on my lap who just walked into the room.
Look, you guys, you get what you pay for.
You get what you pay for, and this is very on brand for a BYU podcast. And speaking of Kyle Griffiths,
I like it.
Speaking of Kyle Griffiths,
I wish she stayed on this podcast.
Well, here's the thing. She randomly about a month ago, and you and I talked about this last week before we started recording, she started calling me poopy butt. And so anytime it's like I go get her up from a nap or wake her up in the morning, good morning, poopy butt. And she just walked in. She opened the door, walked in. Hi, poopy butt. Want to talk on computer? I don't know where it came from. I don't know if I called her that first once, but she randomly just started doing it and hasn't stopped. And I just laugh at it. So I don't feel bad about it. Whatever. It's funny. She only calls me that. So she doesn't, as long as she's not calling random strangers that, I don't care. So speaking of Kyle Griffiths though, and being very on brand of BYU, there was the Jack DeMooney posted the picture, and there was a couple articles about it, of Isaiah Kafusi and Kyle Griffiths giving a Book of Mormon to one of the Western Kentucky players after the game last
weekend. So crazy.
Right. And so
where did the Book of Mormon come from?
That is my biggest question that I want to have answered. Like, I don't know if someone just had it in their backpack.
Like, does Billy, the equipment guy, have Book of Mormons just like hanging out with the hoodies? Like, what is happening?
I don't know. Like, where it came from, but I mean, we talked about it, or there was Robbie McCombs wrote an article about it. But I also talked to Gunnar Britton, the player, the Western Kentucky, one of the Western Kentucky players in the video or in the picture. And he was just said, like, during the game, we're kind of talking back and forth and like, you know, probably made some comment about Mormons, BYU, whatever. And, he was like, and so they just said, hey, talk to us after the game. And so, you know, instead of like, you know, getting mad out of there, saying something about the church, I don't know what the kid said, but, and so he just said, yeah, like, you know, he said, talk, come talk to me after the game. We'll talk about like our faith. And so then he said, hey, like, let's go, like, we'll talk to him. And somewhere they procured a copy of the Book of Mormon, and it came and was, you know, they gave it to him. And I talked to Gunnar Britton, the player from, you know, West Kentucky, and he was excited that he, like, you know, that things were good, and it, you know, that he was happy and felt, you know, was thought it was cool that they gave it to him and were, like, you know, willing to share something that was important to them in a non-confrontational, non, you know, whatever way. And he said, I was like, that's might be the most random mid-game banter, but it's really cool that it happened. He said, absolutely, it was a great experience. So we skipped over our normal Hellion of the Week, but we can go ahead and we'll give it to Kyle Griffiths and Isaiah Kafusi, and even Gunnar Britton, you know, the player from Western Kentucky, for just having a grown-up conversation and acting like adults when that sometimes seems to not happen on sensitive topics in America these days. So good for everybody involved for having a conversation, talking about something, leaving each other better than you found them after meeting them, even after you just knocked each other around and beat each other up for the last 4 hours.
I'm going to say something that people are going to disagree with. The picture did make me feel a little weird. Like, it felt weird when I saw it. The story's cool, and when you get the context of, like, where it came from and that they were cool about it, you know, like, it's fine. I'm not upset that it happened in any way, shape,
or form. That is understandable, because it is kind of like, what the, it's
like the picture made me feel a little weird.
You need, I mean,
that's just me, but it felt, I mean, like, it's going to substantiate. It felt like it could substantiate a lot of the claims of, like, overbearing Mormons that are going to come and knock on your door in the middle of Christmas dinner. Like, that's kind of the vibe I got, that, hey, come play at BYU and we'll convert you. Like, I just felt, yeah. I mean, I get it. It's a cool story. I'm not upset that it happened. I think it's really cool. I love that Robbie, that you guys reached out and got the context of the backstory.
The story is better with the context.
Yeah. I didn't get that. I just saw the picture and I thought, yeah, I just didn't like it. So I don't know.
It is one of those, you know, another lesson of more context is always better. And sometimes, yeah, things that seem weird at first, you're like, actually, no, that's pretty cool. My feelings completely flip because I have the context of what actually is happening.
Unfortunately, the internet doesn't, the context did not go as viral as the picture.
This is, yeah.
So, but, you know, there's been a lot made this week that BYU has been, they haven't been discriminated against, but it's getting late and I can't think of the word, but the BYU has somehow been slighted by the NCAA. The BYU obviously does not practice on Sundays. They never have. They never will. It's just what it is. And I think everybody knows that, including the super smart fan who's always so quick to point out on a Saturday night game that starts at 8:30 as that clock, you know, ticks closer to Sunday.
We're going to hit midnight.
Oh, what's going to happen if BYU hits the game at midnight? Are they going to? It's stupid. Stop it. But everybody knows BYU doesn't practice play on Sundays. Well, this week, they couldn't play or practice on Tuesday because of Election Day. And I actually like the spirit of this rule by the NCAA of emphasizing the importance of voting. But the NCAA shut down, for everybody, shut down practices so that players could go and vote. I don't think that it's the best application of that thought process.
What percentage of, like, FBS or, like, college athletes actually play, their institution they attend is in their home state or even their home district where they would be able to vote?
Because, right, most people,
if you are a student, you are considered a visitor to the area and you don't typically register to vote and take part of municipal and local things there because you are temporarily there and that is not, yeah, your home.
You're registered in Texas, not in Provo.
Right. So,
right. Yep. I get that. And so, like I say, I think the application of where they, you know, where it was coming from, I think is flawed. But I like the idea of, hey, look, yeah, no, voting is important. The other thing is, even if you have to go and wait in line, like, for the most part, how long does it really take to vote? I don't know. I guess I've heard the horror stories of, like, I waited for 7 hours in line, but I've always chalked those up to the horror stories. Like, I think that the vast majority of people an hour, maybe two, but you're in and out fairly quick. Am I wrong?
Right. No, I think that's right. I mean, it'd be interesting to see if they like tracked that thing and it was like, oh, the average person did wait this, but this was the extreme, right? Like if Disneyland can do it at all of the rides, surely they can have one of the old people working at the bowling center, you know, clock things. But the
anyway, BYU, sorry, I cut you off in the middle.
No, you're fine.
BYU didn't get a practice 2 days this week. And then they're traveling tomorrow. They're on there making their way to Boise. So if they do any practice at all, which I don't think they will, it would be light work before they travel. So there has been an uproar of upset fans because BYU is somehow at a disadvantage because they did not get the same amount of prep time for this game that Boise State did. Boise obviously can practice on Sundays. They were also shut down on Tuesdays, but they don't have to travel, so they will practice as normal on Thursday. So
it's really Thursday. It's not going to be that big of a deal. Like it's not like you're changing time zones. Like it's an hour and a half flight, or like an hour and 10 minutes, whatever, from Salt Lake to Boise. So you're up and down. You're going. You're on a chartered plane. You're not even riding a bus to Salt Lake. You're showing like you are driving to the SAB, parking your car on campus, hopping on a bus, riding 15 minutes to the Provo airport, and walking straight onto the tarmac without having to go through security because you're on a charter flight. So you are like, they leave in the morning and they have a normal walkthrough and it doesn't change anything about their practice schedule. Like nothing is different about how they would have practiced if it was a home on Thursday, if it was a home game or not, other than instead of sitting in class, they're sitting on a plane for an hour and a half.
Well, and the thing that I look at with this, first off, is that BYU will play on Saturdays and then they will play on Thursday night games. Like that happens all the time. And we're talking about the same thing, right? That, okay, you play on Saturday, BYU never practices Sunday. You practice Monday, practice Tuesday, travel Wednesday, play Thursday. Like that happens all the time.
2 days of practice, your walkthrough day, which usually if you are traveling for one of those, it's a longer travel, right? Like it's, you know, if you're changing time zones or something, or it's a significant thing to where it's like, okay, we have to do, you know, we normally practice at 3 p.m. Like if whatever time, unless I actually don't know what time the team practices normally, if they do morning practices or afternoon.
It's early. Yeah. It's early.
But I mean, it's,
well, I think there's some of both, but
right. So it's like, if they're used to normally doing some afternoon practices, if they normally practice at 3 o'clock mountain, they're going to land in Boise and practice at the same exact time they normally do. Their clock is not different at all. So yeah, but
and then the notion that practice before the game. So let's say it's a home game and BYU practices on Thursday anyways, they're not going all pads, full 11 on 11 scrimmage, killing each other. Like you take it light before the game day.
And so especially too on Sunday, like the Sunday practice for Boise, whatever work they did was a recovery day. So they're doing a walkthrough. That's when they're doing their install, whatever. And that's going to be something where, you know, the players, yes, it's Sunday. There's no organized thing. But I'm sure every player had all their film ready. They were watching film on their own, talking to guys, texting to guys. Maybe a bunch of them got together on their own and said, you know, what are we doing? This is what we need to focus on. Like here, we got the to-do list. And instead of going to class in person, it was a correspondence course. And hopefully if everyone is diligent, then you get to practice and your Monday time is very efficient, right? And that's the norm, right? Because that Sunday day is just you may spend some time walking through a few key moments of the week before and getting, you know, just in your overall, you know, but it's really is like, it's a recovery install practice and it's a mental day. And so that's what happened. And I'm sure yesterday morning, even though the NCAA said no official team things, there's probably a player run practice. And I'm sure Zach Wilson was bugging guys and saying, hey, let's get down to the field and throw. We need to work on the stuff we talked about yesterday in practice, whatever. And you have all those things happen. But really, I mean, two also, would you trade one Sunday walkthrough of practice or 5 games of experience throughout the season of actual live game reps, which no matter what you do can never be replicated in practice?
And that is the 100% biggest thing that the fans, and I'll concede it hasn't been like the majority of fans, but there's been fans who have been upset about this, That is my counter argument to all of them. If you are one of those fans who's been upset about this practice situation, BYU has played 7 games this year. Boise State has played 2. I don't care what disadvantage, what perceived slight you think there is, whether you think the NCAA has an out for BYU and that's why they denied their waiver or whatever, BYU has played 5 additional games. Like, that's huge. And that makes up for any excuses.
Just go win the damn game, right?
That's
you don't need an excuse. And I'm confident in, honestly, like, we'd probably be lying to ourselves as well if they, you know, guys were not looking ahead a little bit. And I'm sure there were things that they've worked on in practice the last couple of weeks that they really, like, they put them in and they practice them, but they had no intention of using them against Texas State or Western Kentucky, which I think the second half of the Western Kentucky game, they were very clear that they were not intent on doing anything past the first half a page of the playbook.
If it was not in, like, the preface before the introduction, they weren't doing it.
Yes, it was. They didn't.
That was basic. And I said this, and people disagreed with me on Twitter. We didn't do a post-game show. We will against Boise State because it'll be a game we're talking about. But I said that, hey, if you're up by 5 touchdowns or whatever BYU was up, and the team wants to come out and dink and dunk and run the ball down the field and take up 10 minutes of the third quarter in the opening drive of the second half, I don't care if they score a touchdown at the end of that drive. You're so okay with that as the coaching staff of the team who's up by 5 touchdowns.
Well, now, they showed they did not care about winning the game and they weren't right. going to try. So yeah, if they're not going to try, you don't need to try. Guess what? Dude, BYU still covered. If they were 29-point favorites, did not try it all in the second half, still won by 31 points and covered, right?
Like, it was still a blowout. And look, I get why Western Kentucky wouldn't. You know, they want to leave that game. At that point, they want to leave that game with at least something positive going into the next week and into the games that they could potentially win. And a 20-play drive, 10-minute drive that ends in points, like, great. That's a positive for them.
That shortened the game by 2 or 3 possessions. And so as soon as that drive was over, they had 0 chance of winning that game, and they wouldn't have done, like, there was just not enough time left on the clock with the way they were playing. So
the only person who's upset about that drive is Baylor Romney. He's the only one, because he didn't get to play.
Yeah, it did take away some time because immediately after that drive, that's when Zach Wilson threw the interception, which I think that's probably my only biggest concern, like, going into this week, is just, like, what is Zach Wilson going to do, just because he's kind of been able to get away with a lot this weekend. So, I mean, that interception, I think that interception was more so a miscommunication of things, and so the receiver wasn't there to fight for the ball at all, and it wasn't, it was just not a great throw. But the that interception is, like, is he going to try to force something against Boise, which I don't think he will. He hasn't done that. He didn't do that the first time he played Boise. He hasn't done that against other good teams he's played. But yeah, the short week is kind of, it's overblown, and you don't want to kill it. Like, and it's, you know, we, it's similar the last time there was another Friday night game, is like, or another time where we had kind of back-to-back games, is in 2018. There was the Washington game. They go to Seattle, get absolutely beat, and they come back and they have to play Utah State the next Friday. Utah State was coming off a bye, but it was, you know, I think they tried to get all hyped and amped and, like, oh, it's a rivalry game. We got to go, 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 like, super intense all week. And it didn't work. Like, it was not the right decision. And the guys, like, it didn't, you know, what they called that day wouldn't matter because they were just sluggish and out of it, and just, they were beat down. And so I think guys are playing well and being in midseason form, like, this week it's mental. It's, you know, the just being a rivalry game and going to Boise and knowing what's on the line, the physicality is going to be there. Like, the intensity coming from the players in every snap, that's going to be there. That's not an issue. What the bigger question is, or, like, you know, is, are guys going to understand their assignments? Like, are they going to have things drilled down to where they can just do it second nature without having to think too much? Are they, you know, are there things that they've been practicing all throughout the season, but because they've been up by so much, they haven't had to dig deep into things much at all? So those things, are they going to be on top of them? So it can be, we show Boise a bunch of stuff that they haven't seen at all season on film, or is it going to be, we haven't had to do this all season, and so now that we're trying to pull it out, it's sloppy and we make a mistake and turn the ball over? Like, those are the things that are going to make a difference, but not the time of having no Sunday practice.
Right. I'm glad you mentioned turnovers. Look, every game, it's important to win the turnover battle. But especially in this game, seven. So since the series, so let's take away 2003, 2004. Like, those were different BYU teams. It was a different Boise team. So we're going to ignore those. In seven of the eight games since this new, like, renewed rivalry, the team who wins the turnover battle wins the game.
I mean, that's, yeah, that's most games, but especially this.
But especially this game. The only exception was 2016 when BYU somehow forced five turnovers and still lost. I ranked the all of the 10 games, the matchups between Boise State and BYU. Dude, there have been, like, I knew this. I knew that there had been a lot of close games. There have been a lot of close games in this series. BYU, there were four. There are four, not including the Hail Mary from Tanner Mangum to Mitchell Juergens. There are four games in this series that came down to the last play. BYU has lost all four. Like, BYU could very easily be 7-3 against Boise, but instead they are 3-7. And it's because of that. It's because of these one last possession, last play games. It's absurd. I mean, it really is absurd. If you want to check out that article, it's up on Cougar Sports Insider. It's been there for a few days. Ranking the best games between BYU and Boise State. Included videos and highlights for each of those games. It was a lot of fun. We could put the link in our show notes, but it's kind of fun to go back and see the old games. I had totally forgotten BYU's first game in Provo in 2003. Like, it was a disaster of a game. BYU lost 50-12. But I forgot how awful that game was. It was snowy, and it was like that sleety snow.
I remember watching that on TV when I was in like seventh grade.
Oh, it was a mess. And at one point, the score was 28-4. BYU had two different safeties, both on like botched snaps on punts. Like, the game was insanity. So go check out the article. It's a lot of fun to remember some of these old games, even if memories kind of suck. Before we move on, what is your favorite BYU Boise State game?
Ooh.
It's not the 7-6 barn burner, I'm sure of that.
No. I mean, my favorite is, I think everyone's favorite, most likely, is gonna probably be, I don't know, 2015, because like, so 2013 was fun because like, we beat them solidly. It was never really in doubt. It was the first time we beat them. 2015, that game with like starting off with the Tanner Mangum overthrow of Devon Blackman that was caught by Mitchell Juergens on the first drive of the game. And then the end of the game with Mitchell Juergens catching the other Hail Mary and then Kainakua with the pick six. Like, that game was fun because that might be the loudest that I remember Lavelle Edwards Stadium being. I wasn't at the game last year, but that game was, let's see, I would probably say 2015 just because of the way it started and the way it finished. It just insane.
So I can't say, I have a confession. I don't know that I've ever admitted this out loud to anybody. So this is a confession. I was at that 2015 game for the first half.
Don't say this.
They were down big at the half, and I am a big dude, and I had a guy sitting behind me whose knees were in my back. My dad is a very, very big dude. He had knees in his back.
You say it was down big at half, it was 10-7 at halftime.
Well, it felt big though, right?
Okay.
Like, okay. Like that there was no chance Tanner Mangum was going to come back in that game. Like, he had been awful, and the only time they scored was an overthrow that we got lucky. So we left. Anyway, we left at halftime. We got home in time to see it, and like, it was fine. But I was there, and we left because I hate Lavelle Edwards Stadium. I really do. I hate sitting in the upper, it's the upper bowl, but it really isn't, right? Because it's all one bowl. But I hate sitting in that upper section. I don't know what it is, but the seats get a little bit smaller, a little bit more narrow. It is not designed for people who are greater than 240 pounds. It's just not, and it's miserable. So I left. My favorite game, and it really comes, it's really because of a personal story. My favorite game is 2016. BYU lost. That's the game that it was 28-27. They had a whole bunch of turnovers, and they still found a way to lose. That is the last football game that I watched with my grandpa. We were deer hunting, and we were deer hunting in like Hardware Ranch, like kind of by Bear Lake area in northern Utah. And the game was coming on, and my grandpa got so upset that he was going to have to listen to that game. He wanted to see it. And so we drove down from our campsite, and we got a hotel in Logan. We rented it for the night because they don't have hourly hotels that are, you know, clean enough that you want to go into. So we got a hotel and we rented it for the night. We turned on the TV. We watched that game in that hotel, and then we checked out after the loss and went back up to the campsite. So even though it was a loss, that's my favorite game. My grandpa passed away a few months after that, but that game was my favorite BYU-Boise State game.
I can see that one, and I respect that, even though with the loss. That's kind of like one of those things where like it makes it similar, like, you know, every time BYU plays Boise State, you're going to think of that, right? Like,
yeah. Yep.
I mean, the last two national championships games, I know we talked about this a couple months ago on the show that like my sister passed away a couple years ago, and it was like the Alabama Georgia national championship game. I watched sitting in the lobby at the University of Utah Hospital, and like knew what was going to happen as soon as the game was over. I knew what was going to happen. And so it was a very surreal thing watching that game. And so it's like, now when I watch the national championship game, it's always like, oh, I remember this. Like there's something tied to this. So it makes it hit different. So I can see why, especially this week, well, we want BYU to win every week, why this game is especially as important. But we do have good news about this game. And that is, BYU will, or Boise State will not be wearing royal on royal to lay down on the field and try to trick people on kick returns or do any other weird crap. And it, I mean, the blue turf is bad enough on your eyes as it is. It's even worse when there's royal teams playing on it. So
I compare it to one of those 3D pictures that used to be in like every dentist office, every elevator, like in the 90s that like they were like, they were usually, I don't know, in my head, they were always purple or blue or like a darker color. And then you would have to just stare at it for a little while and then the image would pop out. When Boise wears all blue on the blue turf, I feel like I'm looking at one of those 3D pictures the entire game. Like the players aren't really players. They're just sort of like these weird bulges that come up off the field. And I hate it. I just hate it. So the blue turf is tough. I will say the blue turf in person is much more tolerable than the blue turf on TV.
This is true.
I don't.
But I think that's mostly because of the sight line in the stadium. At least you're looking through players rather than straight blue.
Like, I think so. And well, in Boise, the stadium, like the way the TV position is every year, it's up a little bit higher than other stadiums, and so you get even more of like the bird's eye view. It feels like.
Speaking of that,
I agree.
I just want to give a shout out to the Mid-American Conference, which came back with a full slate of action tonight, and there were like three one-score games that finished.
And an onside kick to start off the MAC.
Yes, it was wonderful, but I watched most of the Kent State Eastern Michigan game, and it was on ESPN Plus, and they ran all 22 from the press box the entire game, and it was freaking awesome. Like, please give me more of that.
Is that because ESPN was like, we don't really want to send a camera crew out there. Can we just like pay you guys to use your game film?
Well, I think most of those things, it's the schools are responsible for their own production on smaller stuff. Like they'll put an ESPN shirt on because it's like, and have some, but the school finds some contracted videographer. And so they had limited cameras to this, so they could do 15 different camera angles. They had the normal high shot, but instead of zooming in and just seeing the quarterback and the offensive line, they got out a little bit. And I think it helps because Kent State Stadium was a little lower. So even though they zoomed out a little bit, it wasn't like the players were tiny, but it's like, everyone's got a big screen. Okay. Zoom out a little bit. We'll still be able to see the players. Just give us all 22.
I agree. I want all 22 every day. If I was the school, like, have we talked about this with Isaac of the Cougar Club?
Yes, we have.
Sell access. I will pay a monthly fee if it means I can get, I don't need like the coach's breakdown, but just give me the film for all 22. I will pay every month. in order to have that. Even during the off season, I will pay. Charge me an annual fee. I don't care. I will do whatever it takes. Where's my max? I wouldn't pay $1,000, mostly because my wife wouldn't allow me to pay $1,000, but I would consider paying $1,000 for access to all 22.
Yeah, $1,000 would be pushing it. Much my wife would also kill me, but I
also we're pre-rich, so right. Like I'm not saying $1,000 would hurt.
I mean, got the money this week from Geico for the car, so still have to work out the rest of the. So I'm a few thousand richer than I was a couple days ago. So if they hit me up this week, I might swing it. But they, I would. No, $1,000. I mean, if they wanted to charge us $250 to have access to all film and have every cut up possible that the team has access to, I would pay it.
Done. I'm in. I wouldn't even hesitate. $250. I'm done.
Or like, ESPN.
Away my Christmas. Yeah. ESPN. Yeah. Just have one extra camera up high.
Yeah. Well, ESPN, throw up one extra sense. Camera. Give it for every game. Like no. Like make it a paid premium part of ESPN Plus, where you got to pay an extra $5 a month. People will do it.
Garrett, what does it take to start this business?
I don't know.
Like,
becoming a worldwide leader in sports.
Who do we have to talk to at BYU to allow us to just film the game? No telecast. We just want to film the game. And then if people want to buy that, great.
I mean, I think it's ESPN and still considered a broadcast. So I think it's up to them, which is why they need to just start taking my money and giving me what I want. But speaking of what we want, I think people do want some injury updates on the game. So Hank Bachmeier, I believe he is a COVID casualty. That is, I'm 99% sure that's why he didn't play, because they were very mysterious.
They're very coy about the whole
thing. Yes, they're like, he's not playing, but he's not suspended and he's not playing, and we can't give you a timeline of when he gets coming back. That means they don't want people sniffing around. And so they're just going to sit him out, say everything's fine, whatever. So it will most likely be Jack Sears, who was a 4-star quarterback who went to USC, and he can sling the ball. He tore up Air Force last weekend.
Still, I was going to say, like, I know that the backup quarterback's always the most famous guy. I think Hank Bachmeier is a heck of a quarterback. I think Jack Sears is better. Like, he's more athletic. Like, he can scoot. Like, he's kind of like Zach Wilson in a way that they're going to, like, you don't think about his legs, but he'll gain 40 yards in a game.
Right. He's not going to be like a Taysom Hill, Lamar Jackson running quarterback, but he is definitely on the above average of, and he will just make good decisions of when he needs to take off running.
He will pick up a 3rd and 10, and it will piss BYU fans off, but he will pick up a 3rd and 10 with his feet at some point in the game.
Right.
Because, like, he's not the guy. Yeah, he's not Taysom Hill that you're going to plan on him running every game, but the guy can run, and they're going to forget about him. He's got a cannon of an arm. He played at a high level in the Trinity League.
He was Isaac Rex's quarterback in high school.
Yep, he was Isaac Rex's quarterback, played at a high level of high school football, went and hung out at USC, got great coaching, hung around with some great quarterbacks there. Like, the dude can play ball. He was wanted by several different P5s after he decided to transfer away from USC this past year. Like, the guy can ball. I like Hank Bachmeier a ton. I really like Jack Sears. I think he is much better than he's given credit for. Fun story about Jack Sears. Utah fan. Like, I think Utah was maybe his first offer. Aaron Roderick was the OC at the time at Utah. And I think he was the first one to offer Jack Sears. And they thought that they had him in the bag. Like, he had stayed kind of under the radar. He had visited. Utah thought that Jack Sears was theirs. And then USC came in late, extended a late offer, and he ended up signing with USC. But I always, whenever I hear Jack Sears, that's what I think of, is he was very nearly a Ute. But ultimately, that didn't pan out.
We do have some breaking news that just popped up right here in the middle as we are recording.
Ooh. That
the state of Idaho has given permission for 1,000 fans to be in attendance on Friday night. That 1,000 fans will include 235 members of the band and cheer squad, 500 students, and the Broncos players' parents. think it's
kind of gets a big meh from me.
I mean, it's a big meh. I just think it's tacky that they are going to let their parents in, but not the BYU parents. Assuming, yeah. And it says they have to get a negative COVID test and wear before they can go in and wear a mask.
But how are they going to get that before Friday?
I don't know. I don't understand. I think a thousand people can be spaced out in a 35,000 seat stadium pretty easily. That's like 2% capacity, but they,
I don't understand.
Yeah. So I don't, it is kind of tacky. The only tacky thing tackier I've seen, at least they're saying this on Wednesday, is when Charlotte played App State the first opening week of the season this year, the game kicked off at like 12:30 Eastern. At 11 a.m., they announced that they had gotten permission from the state of North Carolina to allow all players' parents into the stadium. And so,
yeah, that was lame.
Of course, the App State parents knew long before that it was going to happen. And so they got let in there. But, you know, Charlotte, most of their players come from North or South Carolina. They could have, if had their parents known, they could have made the trip to Boone and watched their sons play, but they didn't do it. And that was just lowbrow, stupid. And so Boise, I don't, come on, let the BYU players' parents in if they want to be in there too, or take some. You know, maybe it'll just be a limited group from each one. But that is news. I don't think 1,000 fans makes a difference.
It does, absolutely.
No. Especially if it's cold and windy, like you won't even hear them.
The only thing 1,000 fans does for sure is eliminates fake crowd noise, which I'm a very big proponent of eliminating fake crowd noise. So.
Yeah, so, but back to the injuries. George Helani is probably still going to be out. Haven't heard any updates on him. He took a shot to the knee, didn't look good. He didn't play the rest of the game.
BYU wanted George Helani in a bad way. Like, that dude can play some ball.
He is good, and he's going to get it. He's an NFL running back. He will get a chance in the league. But then I think the bigger one, or at least kind of bigger shock for Boise, is Demetri Washington, their best defensive player. He tore up his knee and he's done for the season. So they already have struggled, kind of like they struggled against the run, and their defensive line has struggled this year. And so
they struggled bad, man. They gave up 415 yards to Air Force. Now I get it. It's the triple option, but 415 yards is a lot of yards, even against an option team.
And even too, with like, so their defensive line has like struggled as a bit. And I mean, obviously Boise is still a good team. They're in the upper half of teams in the countries, but this is not the Boise of years past. Like, I think there's still some like people that kind of think of Boise as the Kellen Moore era Boise, which is like a, you know, top five, top 10 team Boise. And they're not that good. They are not in that ballpark or that range. And I think they've slid a little bit, but they're not, I mean, they haven't slid to Colorado State and Fresno State levels, but they have slid, you know, a little bit. They're still a very consistent and good program, but they are very beatable. And so they struggled. And I didn't think Andrew Van Buren was the name of the running back who came in for Helani. I think their offensive line did a good job against Air Force. I didn't think he did anything special. Like, I watched him in watching him on film, he kind of looked like he was a step slow, and he didn't do anything that excited me to, I'm like, man, I like, he didn't do anything that said, man, I wish we had him on our team, especially compared to Katoa, Algier, and like Finau, or even right. McChesney. Like, he would probably be the fourth or fifth running back on our roster.
Yeah, I agree with that. I do think that Boise's a little bit young. I mean, they're in a little bit of where BYU was last year. That I think they have the talent. They're where BYU was last year. They're going to be better than 7-6 type team for sure. But they have the talent that they could have gone out and beat a USC, right? Like, I believe that Boise State has that talent. But they also have the youth and an experience that they could go out and lose a game that they shouldn't. I think Boise State next year is going to be a very, very, very good football team. But I do think they are a little bit, about a year away. I am really anxious to see what BYU does running the ball. We mentioned it. Okay, Air Force had 415 yards. To put this into perspective, Garrett, Air Force had 415 yards. Boise State only missed 10 tackles. To have a game where you miss 10 or less tackles, that's an exceptional game.
That
means you are tackling extremely well. And they still gave up over 6.5 yards a pop, even though they only missed 10 tackles. That tells me that Boise State's got some problems with gap integrity. That tells me that that defensive line got dominated at the line of scrimmage. And that tells me that BYU should be able to run the football. I think that's one thing BYU needs to do, is they need to run the football. They're going to be tempted to let Zach win the game, and you still can let Zach win the game. But if Algier's not getting 15 carries, if the running backs, like that trio, isn't getting 22, 23, 25 carries, then I think that they've done Zach a disservice by putting the ball in his hand too much. I think there are yards to be had and points to be earned on the ground in this game against Boise State.
Yeah, and so even looking, and I know they did a good job actually, like, you know, in game with like run blocking, they did, it's weird. Against Utah State, they really struggled blocking the run, but did okay blocking the pass, and then it was the reverse against Air Force with their PFF grades. But looking at their offensive line, they, like, you look at their offensive players, like Jack Sears is their highest rated player because he played outstanding on Saturday. And then it's like Khalil Shakir, who, you know,
he was also really wanted.
He is a very good wide receiver, but I don't think he is hands, like, he is not better than Marquess Stevenson from Houston. I think they are comparable. They play a little bit of it. They play a different game because Stevenson is more of a skill player, but it's he, I think top to bottom, the Houston receiving core is deeper than Boise State's. Boise State's has, they have Shakir and they have, you know, like, they've got Octavius Evans and CT Thomas, but there is a big drop off there from Shakir, whereas Houston just has a lot of big raw athletes who can play receiver.
BYU's done a really, like, a weirdly good job at defending Shakir over his career.
I mean, they did a good job with Stevenson. If they key on one receiver and you don't have someone else, like, they can keep him wrapped up and keep him in front of him.
I think that these are off the top of my head, but I'm pretty sure, and maybe you could look it up and tell me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure 2018, they held him to like 3 catches and 15 yards. So not very much, like, really didn't have much of an impact at all. Last year, Shakir had a big year. I think he had north of 60 catches, if I remember right, and like 860 some odd yards. BYU held him to 1 catch and 10 yards last year.
Yep. So 2018, for the season, he only had 16 catches for 170. Then last year, he came out big, 63 for 872. But we kept him in check. And, you know, I don't see any reason
Chris Wilcox will play. Like, I know that's been a big question. He is going to play, and I would imagine we'll find out really early, and I'm sure BYU would like to mix it up. But I think that you'll see Wilcox shadow Shakir for a lot throughout the game. BYU has tried to play more man coverage, and so that enables them that opportunity to say, hey, Wilcox, that's your guy. Yeah. And I think that you'll see some of that.
So, but talking about the pass game and what you see, so looking at their offensive linemen on PFF, they're starters, okay? They have one guard. Their highest offensive lineman is rated 72.8. That's one guard. The other starting guard, big drop to 68.7. One tackle, 63.3. And then the starting center, who will be going up against Kyrus Tonga all night long, and the other tackle are rated at 57.8 and 57.4.
The interior of that offensive line is, especially the center, he has given up 5 pressures. I think he's given up, like, I think it's like 40% of the total pressures that Boise has allowed through 2 games against Utah State and Air Force. He's going to have Kyrus Tonga on him all game long. I do expect to see more 4-man fronts. And if it's not a 4-man front, expect to see Max Tooley Max Tooley probably primarily, maybe even George Udo. Lineup is a stand-up DN. I think you'll see primarily 4 guys rushing the quarterback because they're going to have to double Tonga. They will have to double Tonga, given how Gonzalez, what is his last name? Kekanakua something. I can't remember what it is.
Holomalia Gonzalez. So
is it his first name? It's like
Kekaniokoa.
There you go. Okay. He struggled. He's young. He's a sophomore. He's a redshirt sophomore. He's light. He's like 6'2". If they list him at 305, I don't think he's north of 300. And so well, that was a little bit of a Rod Gilmore comment, wasn't it? That, oh, he looks 305. No way. He's like 299. Like, that was a little Rod Gilmore of me. But I do think he's light. Tonga should have his way. So they're going to have to double Tonga. And so I would expect to see a lot of four-man fronts from BYU because those other three guys are going to have one-on-one matchups. I would not expect to see a lot of exotic blitzes and five and six guys coming after the quarterback, because I know that this team, I know that Elisa Tuiaki, he wants his guys to be able to win one-on-one matchups. When they do, BYU is really hard to move the ball against. That's what happened against Houston. Everybody wants to say that, well, in the second half, Kalani took over the plays. No, he did not. It was the same plays. They were just winning battles. And I think that you're going to see that against Boise State. And I think that that BYU has the chance to do really, really well in that arena and look like they're getting a lot of pressure on the quarterback. But in reality, they're doing the same stuff they've been doing.
Yeah. So other BYU injuries, and agree with all that. The other BYU injuries, so you mentioned that Chris Wilcox is going to be back. I think James Empey should be good to go. Gunnar Romney and Zach Smith both only played about a half last week. And then not even, it was kind of bizarre. I'd never seen players who were not hurt change into street clothes before the game ended. But that happened with both of them on Saturday. And I think that kind of tells where the mindset of the whole team was in that second half.
Was Dax in street clothes too?
In the fourth quarter, he was.
How bizarre. I knew Gunner was, but how bizarre.
Yeah. So Tyler Batty not expected to be back, but Keenan Peely should also be back as well. Is there anybody else that we've forgotten on that list?
Yes. And it's Kavika Fanua. Maybe you said Kavika Fanua.
I did not say Kavika.
I'm expecting him to play, and dun dun dun, I think he's going to play safety. I think he will line up alongside Troy Warner in that Zane Anderson role. Instead of being that nickel corner, and instead of looking to Hayden Livingston or Malik Moore, I think it will be Kavika Fanua.
Well, I think too, George Udo has been playing a lot of that one King Chris out, and he's earned more playing time, and he deserves to stay at that spot because he has been playing better at that position than Kavika was.
Yeah, he's been playing really, really well. So keep him in the lineup. Kavika's incredibly versatile. People forget how athletic he is. I mean, he was a senior in high school, I think, in 2012. I mean, so it's been a real long time since he was a Nike Spark athlete. But he had insane Spark scores.
Like people don't realize that. I mean, he ran track in high school, and Kavika Fanua, his 100 time in high school is faster than Jamal Williams.
Yeah, like the dude is fast. So he's absolutely capable of playing safety. And what BYU does, like, I think the BYU fans, and I get it, it's natural. They want to know who's safety, who's linebacker, who's whatever. What BYU does on defense is like almost the Mark Pope equivalent of what he does on basketball, that there's no positions, right? You have bigs and you have guards, and that's it. Like, there's no 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You have a few bigger guys and a few smaller guys. But if your big guys can shoot, great. If your big guys can dribble, even better, right? Like, there's just, it's positionless basketball. BYU has taken that approach on the defense, and it's a little bit of like positionless football, that safeties, linebackers are kind of interchangeable. Corners, linebackers, kind of interchangeable. You know, we could argue about the efficacy of that and if that's the way that they should do it, but that's what they've done. And when you get into situations like this, Zane Anderson goes out. Could Malik Moore fill in and play well? Sure, he absolutely could. But why not go with your 50-year senior, 60-year senior, Kavika Fanua, who can also do it and play incredibly well, and you still get to keep George Udo on the field? Like, it makes all the sense in the world, and it's because they've been playing positionless football that it allows them to just move guys around like that. Like, it's like Multiplicity. Like that movie Multiplicity, who was that? Pauly Shore, was that him?
I can't remember.
And there was just a million of them. Like, that's what it is. Like, everybody kind of has five positions.
And it's hard too with your wanting to balance that and cross train your guys, but then with similar to like we talked about last week of needing to, like, you still have to balance, like, okay, how can we build depth by having guys understand other positions, but then also can't feed them too much that they can't remember their job of what they're supposed to do. He'll go back there. It'll be interesting. I think he may have a short leash just because of the big game. That is, you know, Jared Capisi played really well last week when he came in after Zane went down. And so I yeah, wouldn't be surprised if, you know, they may be rotating. We may see them taking turns every other drive for the first, you know, quarter of the game, just to see who is playing better before it settles into one person. And whoever's playing better that day is probably going to get the nod because of what is on the line. So in terms of the actual game itself, the line opened up depending, it was all over the place, different books, you know, some opened with BYU as a favorite, some opened with Boise as a favorite, but it was anywhere from like BYU as a 1-point favorite to some had Boise even as a 3-point favorite, but then they immediately swung to wherever the line started, kind of settled in at BYU as a 3-point favorite. You know, computer projections, the average computer model is projecting this to be like BYU or Boise by less than half a point. So it's basically computers are projecting a pick'em, and it's supposed to be cold night. It's going to be kind of the first real chill and get, you know, it gets windy in Boise. And so it can be tough to play there. You know, it's going to, Jack Sears has never played in an environment like that. So that is something, right? Cause he didn't join Boise's program until the summer. So he wasn't there through the little bit of spring ball. Like this is the first time that he's ever played in cold weather. So the weather, it's weird. Some things are forecasting rain. Some are not.
I have a weather bug on this. I do. Okay. So I think I know on Android, because I'm team Android and will be forever and always, the default weather app on a Samsung is the Weather Channel. I don't know who it is on an iPhone. Who is it? Is it an Apple app that's the weather? I don't know what it is.
Yeah, it's just built in. There's a weather app.
So that's what I think a lot of people are going to use. And I don't know what they're projecting, but I have a secret for everybody. Weatherbug. I don't know who owns it. I don't know who runs it. I don't know where it came from. But weatherbug.com is by far and away the most accurate weather service. I mean, I wish that we could track this. I wish that there was some sort of empirical data that could substantiate my claim that Weatherbug is better than the rest. But Weatherbug is better than the rest. And they are saying that at 7 o'clock Friday night in Boise, 57 degrees, partly cloudy, and a light wind of 5 miles an hour. And the forecast at midnight on Friday night, 47 degrees, partly cloudy with even less wind. So, I mean, everywhere from 7 to midnight, it just gets a little bit cooler, drops about 10 degrees, partly cloudy, light wind. According to Weatherbug, we're going to have fairly decent weather. Little chilly, but that's football weather.
Right. And hopefully I almost want it to be more chilly and I want it to be wet because I feel more confident in Zach Wilson. Well, I feel more confident in Zach Wilson versus Jack Sears anyway, but like I feel more confident.
I feel more confident in Tyler Allgeier running the ball.
I feel more confident in Tyler Allgeier versus Andrew Van Buren in that situation. I feel more confident in our offensive line getting a push in that situation. So if the weather is bad, I think it plays in BYU's favor. I'm not worried about it. People have been talking about it. I don't care. Go win the game.
Weatherbug says it's not going to be bad though. And I trust Weatherbug like I trust my wife. Like Weatherbug could tell me anything. If Weatherbug says, hey, the weather that you're going, when you're going to your vacation at Disneyland, if Weatherbug tells me that it's going to be snowing in Los Angeles, it would make no sense and nobody would agree, but I would pack for snow and nothing but snow. And I would be the only one in all of LA who is comfortable. That is how much I trust Weatherbug. And everybody, now you all know the secret. Weatherbug.com. We are not sponsored by Weatherbug.
No, but if they want to sponsor us, they can. That's chill. What does BYU, and we've kind of sprinkled this in throughout the game, but what does BYU need to do and what do they need to avoid to win this game on Friday night?
To me, there's really simple. They have to run the ball. They have to. Like Zach's going to be amped up. All the eyes in the world are going to be on this game. It's a top 21 matchup, I guess. BYU's highly ranked. The stakes are huge. The winner of this game is looking at a New Year's Six Bowl, you know, down the barrel at a New Year's Six Bowl at least. The loser of this game probably ends up in the famous Idaho Potato Bowl. Like that's the stakes that we're dealing with here. So everybody's going to be watching this game. Zach Wilson, obviously, he was recruited and committed to Boise State. He flipped there close to a month before signing day.
Boise State fans are very upset about that.
And Boise State fans do not like him. They do not like his parents. They do not like anything to do with the Wilson family. And so is that going to weigh on his mind? Yeah, I think it is. Like, Zach has never, there's never been a moment that was too big for Zach. He's always been pretty poised. But if there's going to be a moment, I don't think he's played in a moment that's as big as this one. So we'll see how Zach goes. They have to run the ball, get into the flow of the game, get settled, let the offensive line do what the offensive line does, and then unleash Zach and let him do his thing. But I think running the ball is going to win this game. What they need to avoid, we already talked about it. For me, it's really simple. Most of these games against Boise State come down to a single possession. Don't give them extra possessions. That's simple. And most, I don't think I want Zach to change the way that he plays quarterback. I want him to be aggressive. And if they pick off a pass, then they pick off a pass. It's the stupid penalties. It's the stupid turnovers. It's the muffed punts. It's the, you know, that kind of stuff. Like, that's what has to be avoided. Fumbles and muffed punts and you know, mishaps on special teams. If they avoid that, I think they're going to be in a position to win the game.
And I agree. I think it's just needing to play sound football and just not getting caught up in the moment. And like you said, Zach has never had a moment that is too big for him where he like played bad or just was like out of it. So I don't, not getting that, letting that moment get away from him and having that happen, but just, you know, protecting the football and doing what you know you need to do and just not, nobody trying to be a hero, just show up and play the way you've been playing all season. Don't think too much that it's Boise State, right? Like, you obviously can't look past them, but understand what you need to do and show up and play football. And it's not, I think BYU is the better team this year. They have played, they have more experience, they're playing better. They just across the board, even like most positions within the two deep and with who is healthy, the matchups, almost every position, it favors BYU. And they just need to play and play well. And it's not, you know, no one going trying to do crazy. Don't try to do too much. Just do what you're supposed to do and you'll be all right.
Yeah, that's simple. I mean, it really is that simple. I think that's what it's going to take. If BYU does come away with the win, I'm going to talk about it again. Extend Kalani Sitake. Today, Kyle Whittingham got a contract extension through the 2027 season. There's a whole bunch of things in there. If he decides he's going to retire, that he's still going to be taken care of. I get it. Kyle Whittingham has done more for Utah's program than Kalani has done for BYU's, but they haven't even played a game this year, and he already has a contract extension. Like, this is the way that college football is played. As much as people want to compare their personal jobs to college football, and there are similarities in the way that you operate and the way that operations can run and the interpersonal communication between players and coaches and assignments and things like that. There are a ton of similarities. When it comes to contracts, that is not one of the similarities. It just isn't. The idea that you have to earn a specific contract, that you have to earn something before it can happen, is kind of silly. Like, the way that college football contracts work is it's all about the buyout. That's the only thing that matters, is the buyout. So extend the man, make the buyout whatever you're going to make the buyout, but extend the man so that he can sell that message on the recruiting trail, that he could sell that message to his assistants, try to keep them intact. Because if Kalani, I think Kalani's going to probably have some offers. I don't know if he'll entertain them or not, but I think he has some attention during this next coaching carousel cycle. But his assistants absolutely will. Like, they've played phenomenal, or they've coached phenomenally well this year. They are going to have some attention. If you can extend Kalani and maybe he's able to secure a little bit more assistant pool money, maybe you're able to keep one extra assistant coach. That's a big deal. That's what you need to have in order to
the 10th of your staff.
Yeah, that's a huge thing in order to keep recruiting momentum, in order to keep the momentum of this team. Like, it might be the difference in being able to keep Bessie Sitake as the passing game coordinator or losing him to an offensive coordinator job at Utah State. Like, that really could be the difference. So you've got to do those kinds of things. I don't care what people think about he hasn't earned it because he was, you know, so bad at 2000. It doesn't matter. If you're not going to fire him, then you extend him. And I know he just got a contract extension, but we're in the same scenario this year that we were in last year, where we don't know if Kalani Sitake is going to be in Provo next year. Last year, we thought it might, he might not be there because he would get fired. This year, we don't know if he's going to be there because he may take another job. If you're BYU, the way to remedy that is to do everything you can to ensure that he stays. You know, give him that raise proactively so that he stays in Provo and maybe doesn't pick up the phone when Arizona calls him in 6 months.
You know, I think his raise doesn't even need to be huge because he wants to take care of his guys. You give him a 2-year extension with, you know, somewhere between $250,000 and $500,000 more to the assistant coaching, to the assistant salary pool. He'll be happy. He'll stay there.
You get him. Dude, I think you can get away with not even giving him a raise. And you say, hey, we're going to extend you for 3 years. And instead of a $1.5 million, whatever the number is, a $1.5 million buyout, we'll update that to $5 million. Right. I think he stays. I think he would be totally happy with that. Give all the extra cash today to the assistants, but just update his buyout so that, yeah, if you do want to fire him next year, you're going to have to pay him a little bit more money.
And it's not, yeah, right. And it's, the extension is not about keeping him here. It's that, like, it's just also too, it's a mindset of, you want to have a mindset of, like, for lack of a better word, prosperity, right? Like, you want to expect to succeed and you want to expect to win. And if you are expected to win, then you expect your coaches to be poached and be them to take in a, like, you expect players to go early and leave for the draft. You expect coaches to be entertained by other schools, and you need to make sure you protect them, and you have to preemptively do it, because you can't go, you know, you can't say employee comes back and says, hey, I got an offer for double my salary at this other, at our competitor. You what? Oh, well, we appreciate you so much here. We'll match their new salary. You've had that the entire time. You could have given me this raise or paid me this the entire time, right? Like, it's all about, especially in college football now, it's all about, especially, and where BYU is at, and teams at the G5 level, and then, or teams that are operating on a budget like BYU, it's all about the buyout, right? Like, it's, you get the buyout so that way somebody else with a bigger checkbook comes and gives you a crap load of money that you can infuse into your program. That's the point of the extension, is to get the buyout in case he leaves. It's not about keeping Kalani around forever because he's doing a great job. It's about, like, it's that investment of hedging that risk of, if he leaves, we want a lot of money to be able to go hire somebody and be able to upgrade the locker room and do some other things for the facilities, you know, once he leaves, and not have to pay for it.
Yep. Done. I mean, so, it's so simple in my mind. Every time I say it, I get people who disagree. People who say, well, if he beats Boise, then we could talk, you know? And I get it. I get that, why that's a temptation. I understand that BYU's strength of schedule hasn't been what, you know, everybody thought it would be. But the fact remains that BYU is currently 7-0 for the first time in 20 years. They are ranked inside the top 10 for the first time in 20 years. And Kalani Sitake got you there. And we can talk about all the other things. There's a lot of other reasons that I think he's plenty worthy of being extended. But those two facts are huge.
Right. And it's just something you hit on, of like when you're saying, when you beat Boise, you know, we've talked a lot about margin of victory and why style points matter. And that's a two-way street, right? Like, it's not just, oh, we're 7-0. Like, people are like, oh, they haven't played anyone. It's like, okay, it's not like they're limping along winning these games by 3 or 7 points and are lucky to be 7-0, or even they're winning by 10 points where it's like comfortable, but still close, right? Like, it's, they're dump trucking every team they play. Right. And so it's, they are 6-1 against the spread. They had one game when they looked ahead on Houston against UTSA, were focusing on Houston. They didn't give UTSA the prep they deserved, and got that one, almost slipped away from them. But every other game, they're absolutely dump trucking people. So it's the flip side of that, and that corollary is like those games. So it's like, hey, the two times that Kalani Sitake's teams have lost in Boise, 2016 and 2018, those came down to the last play of the game. They were very close. Like, it's not like, yes, it wasn't a loss, and obviously there's no such thing as a moral victory, but when you are evaluating a coach's performance and having the team ready, like, in my opinion, anything that comes down to, if you lose a game by one score, you cannot put that on the coach. Okay. Like, that is, the game plan was there. They had a chance to score more points, but players did not execute. Like if you completely get blown out, that's a game plan issue or a talent issue or a lack of focus issue during the week in practice. But if it's a one score game, that's not coaching. That's player execution. And obviously if that consistently happens over and over, then it's like, okay, you're just not getting your guys ready enough. But it's like in a tough game, like, you know, especially too, you have to look beyond the box score or you have to look beyond the scoreboard and look at the box score and be like, okay, this was a freak game. The freak things happen. Like how, you know, there were a lot of issues or whatever. And even then in that 2016 game, I think if Jamal Williams doesn't get hurt, can actually play, they win that game and it's not a problem. So that's not a game plan issue. That's they was a very, very good Boise team and they took them down and lost by 1 point. It happens. But we do have a couple reviews before we get to our picks. So we have three new reviews and we haven't read them in a couple weeks. So one from Jeopardy Superfan, 5 stars.
Hold on. I'm confused about Jeopardy Superfan. Like maybe he's just a super fan and that's awesome.
Maybe it's Ken Jennings.
But it made me wonder, have we said something about Jeopardy that like, is this an inside joke that I'm missing?
I don't think so. We haven't. I don't know. I don't remember anything, but it says very good analysis of BYU football by likable hosts.
I'll take that all day.
Then one from Mike Polson, who is a good friend of the show, said, a must listen for all BYU fans. You come for the BYU content, which you might get sprinkled throughout glorious rants of food and life, and you leave a better person. So I mean,
We're glad we can edify everybody's lives.
Yes. Well, thank you, Brother Polson, for sharing those kind words with us. And lastly, from Jos Josenstein, said, best BYU podcast. I listen to Give 'Em Hell, Brigham every week and is definitely one of the highlights of my work week. I love the tangents and random topics of each episode. Don't let the haters get you down. Jeff and Garrett, keep up the great work. So thank you.
Do we have haters? I think we do. We have this one coward who left a 2-star review and then wouldn't say anything.
That is a hater. Whoever people talking crap about my microphone, which I'm now wearing the exact same headset that you are. So we should sound the same.
It sounds better.
It does sound better. It's just, it's more consistent. Like it was, I don't know. I'm not a sound engineer, right? Like I'm a data engineer, not a sound engineer. So I don't know what I'm doing, but we found we made it work. But we do have our picks. Last week we both went 5-4, which since we went back and tallied things up and started keeping track, we are both at 14-9 on the season, coming in at 61%. If you are not familiar with sports gambling, when you are betting the spread, 52.4% is break even. So that puts us in at 16.5% as an ROI right now.
That's elite gambling territory, folks.
Yeah, I mean,
give us your 401ks because 16.5%, you're not getting that this year.
No, not.
We are giving that to you. Give us your 401ks, invest with us, and you could have 16.5% more money.
You know, I need to go back and tally up the double ones of, you know, the ones where we both agreed and see if that is, you know, you get the multiple people in the mouth of two witnesses is the bet more sure kind of scenario. But the, so we were both 5-4 last week. UNC let us down big time. Penn State was a bad beat. We had, they were 1 point off from covering. And then we each had a couple other ones that were off. But Utah State opened as a 27-point underdog to the Nevada Wolfpack. The line has moved 10 points. I've never seen a line move that much in all my life. 10 points that now they're only a 17-point dog. And I'm still taking the Nevada Wolfpack in Reno. Utah State is not a good football team.
I think I might have taken Nevada at 27 points. Utah State's bad, guys. Like, they're really, really bad. I know that Boise played Utah State to open the season, and I think that's one of the wins that, like, I don't know, they won pretty convincingly, like 45-19, 49-15, something like that. And so it was a win that, you know, on the scoreboard, it stands out. It's, you know, it's exactly what we've been talking about with BYU. They pummeled Utah State. And that says a lot about Boise. But Utah State's just so bad. Like, it really, I think Utah State is on par with Western Kentucky, with Troy, with those teams this year. They're just not good.
Troy is actually ranked quite a bit higher. So in Massey Composite, Utah State is 97th and Troy is 72.
Yeah, so I mean,
Utah State's peers in computer models We got Western Michigan, Georgia State, Central Michigan, Ball State.
Where's a team like Western Kentucky at while you've got that?
Western Kentucky is 107.
So, I mean, they're right there in the same realm as Utah State.
Yeah, you're, like, I mean, you're splitting hairs down that low. It's like, yeah, it's they. Western Kentucky is 107, but it is, you know, the difference between them is like, it's when they take the average, it's like two spots is the.
Yeah, they're just not good.
Yeah.
So Nevada, I don't know anything about Nevada. I just know the Utah State's not good.
They're 61.
Oh, there you go.
They're 2-0, and let me pull up the prediction tracker. Actually, the Nevada Wolf Pack moved to 16. I mean, the models are still saying Nevada by 10, but I think it's still Nevada covers. Houston is a
13. And it's at Reno. Reno's tough to get to.
Yeah. Hopefully, they're not traveling the day of the game.
Gary, come on, Gary.
Cincinnati is a 13.5 point favorite at home against Houston. Houston had a good test last week against UCF. They got pummeled 44-21.
And Cincinnati, failed.
Cincinnati absolutely destroyed Memphis, which I know Memphis has taken a step back this year, but I did not expect the game to be that big. I mean, Cincinnati is in the same boat as BYU with me. It's like, I bet Cincinnati until they prove otherwise. Like, they are playing, their offense struggled the first couple weeks of the season, but the last 2 weeks, they have looked incredibly good on both sides of the ball. The defense has always been what it is, but Desmond Ridder seems to have figured it out at quarterback and is playing a lot better. And I just don't see it. You know, I don't see Houston with the way they've looked in some of their other games. I don't see them hanging, you know, within, or their defense being able to stop Cincinnati, or, you know, hanging in within 14 points.
Yeah, my head agrees with you. I can't remember what the context even was that I sent a text to you earlier today that I said the heart wants what it wants. And my heart wants Houston. I am betting with my heart, not with my head. And I want Houston to win this game so bad because it helps BYU on so many different fronts. I should pick Cincy. Cincy's probably going to cover. They're probably going to win by a lot. But my heart wants Houston, so I'm picking Houston.
Yeah. I wish I could play it with my heart like that, but
well, we don't have real money involved, so
it's true.
Well, but if you are taking your 401k at my recommendation, don't bet this game. Bet the other ones we're going to talk about. Go with Garrett because Garrett's right.
The next game we have, Arizona is a 14-point dog at Utah.
It's so hard because these teams, we know so little about them. I think that I'm really curious to see Utah. I think Arizona sucks. So I'm going to take Utah, but I'm really curious to see Utah this year at home because so much of their advantage at home and what makes them great is that's a really tough place to play without fans there. I wonder how much different Utah looks. They're breaking in a new quarterback. They've got a quarterback controversy, after all offseason long of hearing how Jake Bentley is a NFL quarterback and should win the Heisman. Cam Rising is right neck and neck with him. And depending on who you listen to, if you listen to me, it's because Jake Bentley isn't nearly as good as everybody said that he was. If you listen to other people, it's because Cam Rising is also an NFL quarterback who's going to win the Heisman. I don't know who's right. We'll find out. But I don't think Utah's that good. I think they're going to rebuild and then be very good.
I mean, they are 130 out of 130 in terms of returning production.
Yeah, I think that they lost
more than any other team in the country.
I think they have a ton of young talent, and I think they're set up with a very, very bright future, but I don't think that future's this year. So I'm going to pick Utah because Arizona's a hot mess, but I'm anxious to see what that looks like.
I agree. So who are you picking?
It's Utah. I'm taking Utah. Okay,
still taking them 14.
I would not be at all surprised if Arizona covers, but Arizona just sucks so bad. But go AJ Stewart. Come on, bear down.
I'm going bear down. I'm going to bet with my heart at this one. I have a lot of relatives who are Arizona alumni. The Arizona quarterback, Grant Gunnell, is actually like pretty good. And I think maybe he could surprise some things and do some things. Oklahoma State is a 12.5-point favorite at K-State. I'm taking K-State on this one. They knocked off Oklahoma, and they've struggled since then, but Oklahoma State looked obviously very beatable because they lost to Texas last week, but it's, you know, they, Chuba Hubbard is not running as well as he did last year, and they are, their record of getting to like 6-0 and now being 6-1 or 5-1, whatever, was a lot more shaky than BYU's, you know, and how they get there. We're talking about how they've been winning games. So I think K-State could pull off the upset.
I'm going to take Oklahoma State. I really like Spencer Sanders. I think that the Fighting Mike Gundys and his mullet will have that team ready to go.
Okay. Florida is a 3-point dog at Georgia. Who do you have in the world's largest outdoor cocktail party?
This is a good game. I don't think Georgia. I want to take Georgia. I'm going to take Florida and the points, but I think Georgia probably wins that game by a point. I just don't know if I trust Georgia's quarterback situation.
Yeah, and Kyle Trask is playing really well, and especially with how Florida played last week at Mizzou, like I feel like Florida's just clicking right now. Georgia, they have some issues, and
I think that stadium's going to be full. Like I think helps. We know that.
I don't know. It'll be interesting, but I'm taking Florida as well. Clemson is a 5.5-point favorite on the road in South Bend. Sands, Trevor Lawrence, so that's obviously affected line somewhat, though DJ Uiagalelei played extremely well last weekend. You got the Tigers?
Clemson. Notre Dame, this is the game that Notre Dame runs into every year that we learn that Notre Dame is not as good as their ranking, that they're a very, very good team, but they're not an elite team. DJ Uiagalelei is fantastic. Like, they're not even going to miss a beat next year after Trevor Lawrence is gone because he's that good. Their defense struggled against Boston College. I think that maybe they had a little bit of the BYUs, that they looked ahead and overlooked Boston College a touch, knowing that they had a top five game against Notre Dame this week. And I think they go to South Bend and they stomp the Irish.
Yeah, I think so too. And I mean, if you watch this game, please watch it. It will be fun. Like, DJ is a freak. That kid is like, you see him and no, 18-year-olds are not supposed to look like that. He can throw the ball. He can run. I'll be good. Louisville's a 3-point dog at Virginia. I haven't watched Louisville at all this season, so I don't know what to make of this game.
They are a team that struggled bad early and is getting better. Virginia, Brandon Armstrong came back, quarterback. They beat North Carolina. This game opened as a pick 'em, and the money has gone Virginia's way. But I'm going to take Louisville.
Okay. I think so too. I feel like this is set up for a classic letdown after they got hyped for the top 15 game last week and pulled off the upset, that they come crashing back down to reality. And there's some regression to the mean there. Our last pick, we have BYU's 3-point favorite on the road at Albertson Stadium in Boise, Idaho. Who do you have in the Cougars playing the Broncos of the Boise Trucker Institute?
I really respect Boise. I think that they have a very talented team. I think they're going to win a whole lot of games. I am a believer, man. Maybe it's the hype train. Maybe it's blue goggles. I am a believer that BYU is as good as we think they are. And I think that this week is the week that they prove that to the world, that they are as good as they think they are. I actually like BYU to win by at least a touchdown, maybe more. Not because of any disrespect for Boise at all. I think Boise is a great team, and I think next year Boise probably beats BYU in Provo. But this version of BYU, they're just built different, man. And unless BYU shoots themselves in the foot, I really think that's the only way they lose this game, is if they have dumb turnovers, dumb penalties, and they just blatantly stop executing how they have been over the first 7 games of the season.
Amen. I agree wholeheartedly. I think BYU wins by more than a touchdown, and I think the score may only be a 10-point game, but I think it will be comfortably in hand the majority of the game, and we're going to go to bed happy on Friday night.
And we are going to do a post-game show. This is the,
We will do
this. This is the first game I feel like we have to, right? Yeah. Like we absolutely have to. Look, it just was, there was nothing to talk about against Western Kentucky. The game was boring. We were all bored. I think people fell asleep, even like the most avid BYU fans. I didn't want to do a postgame show. And because we don't get paid, we didn't have to do a postgame show. So we didn't do a postgame show. We're really sorry. But, and maybe it's out of protest, I do know that our downloads dipped fairly significantly, like almost in half this week compared to the previous 3 or 4 weeks. And I apologize. That's probably because we didn't do a postgame show. But please subscribe. Please share the show. Please rate and review. Obviously, only 5 stars. But I mean, if you are going to be this coward and leave a 2-star review, then at least leave a review. Don't just leave a little 2-star rating and abandon ship. Like, come on. It's like, say something. Tell us what you hate about us and we'll respect that. But if you're going to leave a 2-star review and just leave, you mean nothing to me. You mean absolutely nothing to me. So please like, share, subscribe. Sharing the show, it really does go a long ways. Please share the show. Help us out. Help us grow. Just for the sake of growth, not for the sake of any. We're not doing this to make a ton of money. We're not doing this to make any money. We just want to grow, and we want to edify everybody's lives. So please, I'm not going to make a religious joke. I almost stepped over the line into sacrilege there. But please share the show.
Share the show. Like, subscribe, all that stuff. If you have feedback, please give it to us. We got 2 days until game day. It is Wednesday. It's almost Friday. Maction is back tonight. The election is pretty much over. Life is better today than it was a week ago because we are not inundated with political ads instead of being able to watch meaningless football games on Tuesday night. Let's give them hell the rest of the week, Jeff, and beat the Broncos.
Give them hell.